Rodgers in trouble. Does he have a vintage moment in him? In the end zone, it is caught for the win.
Pressure, pass is picked off, and who is it? Big B.J. Raji for the touchdown.
What up? We are here with another episode of the Packs What She Said podcast going on, I think, 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks with a new intro. Gonna already running out of ideas, so gonna have to keep grinding, keep finding new ways to introduce the show. But I am one of your hosts, Maggie Loney, joined as always by Perry Goldstein. Because we've already talked about the Packers and the Lions, we will do kind of a brief what's different about the Lions, and then we have a little bit of a mailbag where we got some pretty good questions on our Twitter this morning that we thought we'd answer as kind of the second half of the show. So, Perry, the Packers can clinch the division this week with a win over Detroit, and if the Vikings lose to the Buccaneers.
Wait, that's crazy. That's so early for the Packers. Normally, yeah. they don't know until like week 17. That's very exciting and also very possible on both fronts. I think the Buccaneers would feel not great about themselves. They lost to the Vikings. Is that game home or away for the Bucs?
It's at the Bucs. Yeah. It's,
yeah. Yeah. So that's, yeah, we'll be rooting for the Bucs, you know, unfortunately, this week. And yeah, Packers are going to Detroit. They're going to Ford Field. Nice dome experience for Aaron Rodgers against the 32nd ranked Lions defense. So it should be a very, very favorable matchup for this number one Packers offense.
Yeah, and I want your thoughts on this because I talked about this a little bit on Pack a Day, and we talked about it a little bit on Happy Hour, but the Lions obviously let go of Matt Patricia after their Thanksgiving loss to the Texans, and the Lions now are 1-0 under their interim head coach, even though it was a game that they likely should have lost. This is the second time this season that the Packers have played an interim head coach. They played Romeo Crennel when he took over for the Texans in week 7. He was 1-1 at the time. He's now 4-4. And it kind of, I said this on the show, reminds me a little bit of when the Packers fired Mike McCarthy at the end of the season and the Packers went out and immediately won the next week for Joe Philbin, going 1-0. And then they ended that season 2-2. So do you think having a new coach really changes much for the Lions? Because I think it's more of a, we're going to rally for the new guy thing. And then the team is still that team. I think the Lions are still the Lions, and this isn't going to be some type of magical turnaround.
I don't really like buy into that, to be quite honest with you. First, I think this win this past weekend was more of excitement that they're not under Patricia than it is for that they have like Bevel now. I mean, Bevel's been with them all season, right? Like there's not much different. And I feel like this is very similar, like very, very different. I mean, than Mike McCarthy. Like Mike McCarthy was a Super Bowl winning, like 8-year, 9-year head coach. That was difficult. Like, I think that was more to like save face for the Packers organization that they should go out and win. I mean, these guys are competitors. They don't go out there every week to lose. I know that there's some fun like tropes about the Jets tanking for Trevor, but no player makes it to the NFL and then decides I'm going to go out there every Sunday and lose. That's just right. Not in their nature. So I don't particularly think that there's that much to it. I do think though that, like, you know, there does get to a point in the season when you clearly are out of playoff contention. You don't want to hurt yourself in an unnecessary game. Maybe the players don't play as hard, but that's not the Lions. They are a little bit out of the hunt, but I think second place in the division is kind of up for grabs right now between all three teams. The Bears are just absolutely imploding, so I don't see it being the Bears. But I think the Lions, if they made a push and kind of won out or won most of the rest of the season, like they could potentially grab that 7th seed out from under the Vikings. So it's not like they're out here playing for nothing. But I also don't think that Bevel is going to bring anything particularly new to this team. I think they're pretty much going to be what we've seen all season under Patricia. There's not much out there to change. It's not like they've brought in any new personnel, and he's probably going to run the same scheme that we've been seeing all season. So it's a little bit of a toss-up. I just think that, you know, the Lions aren't very good. And just because they're playing under a new head coach doesn't mean that all that much has changed. And I think the Packers have only gotten better since we've played them in week two, and we still put up over 40 points on them in the second week of the season. So yeah, maybe they have some fire because they're happy that Patricia is gone, but that's not a winning formula. So you don't win a season off spite.
I love that idea, honestly, winning because you're spiteful. But no, and I think it's kind of funny. Daryl Bevel, Packers fans maybe saw it kind of circulating this week, but he was actually Aaron Rodgers' first quarterback coach. Just for a year when he got drafted, he was with the Packers in 2005. So I do think that's a little bit of like a funny connection, how things kind of come full circle. And now the could be three-time MVP will be playing against somebody who was there when he first entered the NFL. So I mean, you know, we talked about this a little bit pre-show. There are some things that are kind of different about this Lions team going into this matchup. Like you said, it's in a dome. The Packers, you know, have played well on the road this season. Kenny Galladay, let's talk about their injury report. You know, Kenny Galladay probably will not be able to play. He's got an injury. Jeff Okuda, their starting corner, who has had kind of a rocky rookie season, probably won't be playing. But outside of those two pieces, it seems like that roster should be relatively healthy and ready to go for the game on Sunday, even though Matt Stafford, he's got, I think it was a right thumb injury, but he'll be playing. He played last week. So
yeah.
What do you see being different about this game?
Not a ton, to be quite honest with you. I mean, especially with Kenny Galladay and Jeff Okuda out, that's your number one wide receiver, arguably, and I guess technically your number one corner, even though he is a rookie and Davante Adams torched him in week two. I guess it's, you know, Matt Stafford is he's the engine that runs this machine, and if he decides to play to the level in which we know he can play, then that always gives them an edge. He's, as Rodgers has pointed out, a quarterback that can make any and all throws, and he's pretty much, you know, the heart. he's it. He's their offense. So I think that it's more about what the Packers are better at, right? We've gone up now to the 15th rank defense, which is much better, I think, than when we started this season. We're shoring up the run better again than we were at the beginning of the season. And our offense is running incredibly smoothly to the point where I feel like Rodgers is going to have a clean pocket the entire game against this pretty abysmal Lions pass rush. So I think it's more that the Packers have improved, whereas the Lions haven't.
Yeah. And I mean, friend of the podcast, Jacob Westendorf, always says, if you look at games on paper, kind of how do these matchups happen? And it genuinely feels like going into this game, the Packers aren't really losing any of the categories if this game were played, you know, on paper and on the stat sheet. And obviously that's not the case, but, you know, the run defense, like you said, has looked better the last couple weeks. They kept Miles Sanders in check. DeAndre Swift is better than he was in the beginning of the season. Adrian Peterson is still a Hall of Fame Adrian Peterson. But beyond some of that, you talked about it already, the Lions front seven is not generating a lot of pressure. They're towards the bottom of the league in sacks. I think they have 18 through 12 games. So Aaron Rodgers should stay upright and clean pretty much the entire game. The Packers had their best offensive output of the season against the Lions. They had like 280 something yards on the ground. We saw Aaron Jones break a career long last week against the Eagles. So, you know, yeah, kind of, you're ticking all the boxes, yeah, for how the Packers can win this game pretty easily.
Yeah. And I think that this, and we talked about this a little bit pre-show, but I think this game just has all the pieces to be like the exact formula in which the Packers win best, which is come out hot, get hot and score early, be ahead a few scores, and then just start to lean on Aaron Jones, run the ball, long drives, force the Lions to throw the ball and lean on Matt Stafford because they're behind in the score. And that's what our defense is, you know, best at, is stopping the pass. So it's just got like all of the building blocks to be a pretty classic win. Of course, it's the NFL and it's Sunday, and that might not happen because we've decided to talk about it that way. Maybe it'll end up being one of those like excruciating Lions games where they're like tied the entire time and win with a last second field goal, because that can perfectly happen. But yeah, I just see this being exactly the way they want to draw it up.
Yeah. So quickly before we go to the mailbag, then I know that we said that we were going to kind of differ from the way that we normally do these shows, but do you have an X factor for Sunday's game? Because to me, there's a couple, I guess, new pieces and kind of new opportunities for some of these players to step up. So knowing what the Packers injury report looks like, you know, we've seen Raven Green go on injured reserve, Tyler Irvin, Billy Winn. Is there anybody for the Packers that you're going to be keeping an eye on Sunday that maybe you wouldn't have been on your radar before this game?
Not that there's no one not on my radar. I mean, I think that I would love to see some more Kamal Martin on the field than he has been, especially with Raven Green out. I think he has like all the makings and athleticism to take over exactly what Raven Green has been doing for us in that sort of hybrid linebacker safety role. Although obviously Kamal Martin leans more linebackers, just more athletic linebacker than we have had in a long time. But I really want to see if Tavon Austin suits up. He was inactive last week, and we don't have Tyler Irvin, and this is why we brought him in, right? Is to take over that kick returner role. So I don't know. I think he could be kind of fun.
Yeah. And I mean, Matt LaFleur had said, you know, Tavon Austin was ready to go last week. He was a healthy scratch as an inactive. It's not like they didn't trust him. It's just how kind of the chips fell that week. But you would have to think that with Tyler Irvin on injured reserve, he will be the guy in the backfield this week, returning punts and kicks. And then Anthony Rush was the player that I personally had in mind. Big 360-pound Anthony Rush, run stuffing. Billy Winn looked really good. I think he's only going to be out about 3 weeks with his triceps injury. Hopefully it's not longer than that. I thought he's had some good moments for the Packers this season, but if the run defense is kind of a question mark, if you put somebody that's 360 pounds in the middle of the defense, that's a pretty big hole that you've just plugged with a giant human being. So I think that's what I'm excited to see is, you know, if he's active and if he plays any snaps, kind of what that does. And, you know, if that takes any pressure off of guys like Kenny Clark, because who do you double team, the guy that's 360 or Kenny Clark? You kind of have to pick your poison there.
Because if you don't double team Kenny Clark, then you're pretty much screwed. Should we take some listener questions?
Yeah, let's do it. All right. Starting with Jared, he said, do you see Mike Patton getting fired if we go 12-4 or 13-3? He says no, personally.
I hate this question, to be honest with you. Like, I don't know. I hope that we have a great season. I hope we win the Super Bowl, you know, like whatever that means for his job or not is up to Goot and Matt LaFleur. I think regardless of record, I can definitely see Matt LaFleur bringing in somebody new this offseason simply because he kept Patton from the McCarthy era for ease of transition, and it's not his choice and it's not his guy, and he does seem a little bit frustrated with him in the way that he's playing his defense. So I think the record doesn't have so much to do with it as just like whether or not Matt LaFleur wants his own guy.
Yeah, and I don't want to be reactionary here, but there's a part of me that thinks Sean Menenga's job is a little bit hotter than Mike Pettine's at this point, because you know the Packers are still winning games and the defense by the last couple weeks has looked, it's ascending to me personally, and I think it's looked much better. And I know that there's garbage time plays that you can throw away, but you know, the Packers players like Zadarius, Preston, Kenny Clark talked to Mike Patton, said, can we get back to doing what we're really good at? And Mike Patton said, yeah. And if this defense continues to look really good the next couple weeks into the playoffs, if they make a deep push, I think regardless of record, if there's improvement there, Matt LaFleur probably, you know, is okay with keeping him for another season. Or if he wants to bring in his own guy, like you said, but the special teams kind of blunders the last couple weeks have been to me more concerning than the defense, is that every time there's a J.K. Scott punt, you're kind of holding your breath, wondering if it's going to go to the house. And, you know, I think there's been 4 punt returns all season for a touchdown, and the Packers have given up 2 of them. So I don't know if that's an indication of Sean Menenga or the guys that aren't playing into their assignments, but to me, that's the bigger question mark right now.
Let's bring Pat McAfee out of retirement.
Can you imagine if he was on the coaching staff and got to just hang out with Rodgers?
Problem solved.
I would love it.
I don't think he would ever do that. He enjoys his job way too much. But yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that let's see what Tavon Austin's got.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's the flip side. That's the problem right now, not our return game.
Yeah. Jordan asks, what has surprised you the most about this Packers season, both positive and negative?
Yeah. Why don't you take this one? I've been thinking about this for a while, but I want to hear what you have to say first.
Okay. So part of what surprised me the most this season has just been the cohesion of the offense, you know, because I think we saw kind of who Matt LaFleur could be and what we knew his scheme could do going into the season. We saw a lot of the kind of building blocks in 2019, but we've said it all season. Honestly, at this point, it sounds like a broken record to say that this is a better Packers team that could finish with a worse record. I think everything about this Packers team is significantly better than the 2019 squad that we saw. And I think that's been a positive surprise. I mean, Aaron Rodgers historically doesn't put up the numbers that he's putting up. He's always been an MVP caliber player, but you know, to have 36 touchdowns in 12 games is pretty absurd. I think he's only topped 35 like twice in his career. So to kind of see the output, seeing Devontae also having a career game, seeing so many Packers like Robert Tonyan with 8 touchdowns contributing so much to the offense, I think that's kind of been the positive surprise. As I felt like it could be a good, successful offense, but to be number one in the league exceeded expectations. And then for the negative, I think honestly, it's still the run defense, because that was, I don't know if that qualifies because it's not really a surprise, but it was one of the big question marks going into the offseason was how will the Packers address this glaring need that they have to shore up the run defense? And in the beginning of the season, it didn't really feel like they had done anything. So I guess we'll kind of see how the season finishes and what that looks like against better teams. But I guess those are my two.
Yeah. I think that I was not surprised by the success of the offense. Just like, I think naturally going into another year, it's going to be better than the first. I think it's a little bit unprecedented, to be quite honest, the success that the Packers had in a first year of like an entirely new regime and new scheme. But I think it's like the level of just overwhelming success that this offense has had, and more, I think, specifically the way that Matt LaFleur has used seemingly no weapons and have turned them into, you know, really successful pass catchers for this offense and Aaron Rodgers. We're going to have, Devontae Adams has already reached over 1,000 yards on the season. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone, but Robert Tonyan is 3 yards away from 500. MVS has already eclipsed 500. I think by the end of the season, Alan Lazard will also have 500. Like, we have 4 pass catchers who are going to have 500 or more yards in a given season. And I don't know if that's happened in a while.
2012.
Thank you. So yeah, that's almost a decade. Think about that. That's almost a decade ago that we had 4 pass catchers have the level of success that the Packers offense has had, not to mention how, you know, just well the run game runs with, I think, one of the best 1-2 punches in the league. So I think it is a testament. Yes, of course, we know that, you know, Aaron Rodgers is Superman. He's one of the best to ever play the position ever in the history of the sport. But I give so much more credit to Matt LaFleur for, I think we've talked about this a good amount, but just like, he just like has eked out everything, all of the potential from every player that he has on this offense, and has led all of them to succeed in a way that I don't think I could have ever imagined them succeeding. And that's just a testament to him and what he sees in his guys, and also the way he deploys his scheme to the benefit of his players. So that's been, I think, the biggest surprise to me is, I guess to sum it up, is just like Matt LaFleur's vision. I guess, negative surprise. I mean, how much is there really? Is there negative on this team? Nothing about what the Packers did this season surprised me in a negative way. I think that like maybe the draft was a surprise to some. I personally didn't have as much issue with it. I'm not surprised that they didn't grab someone in free agency, especially given this sort of weird year. The run defense doesn't surprise me. I do think, I guess, the sort of clear, maybe I'm just projecting, but the sort of clear I don't think distrust is the right word, but small annoyance that you could see from the head coach in our defensive coordinator. He's never obviously outright said anything, but if you listen to his press conferences, I think as often as we do, you pick up on his emotions and the way that he expresses himself. And there's definitely been some comments that just surprised me out of a Packers leader. Not necessarily in a bad way, but you know, you definitely don't go into the season hoping that your defensive coordinator is somewhat on the outs by the end of the season. So,
yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And that's, you know, really well said too, is just the fact that Matt LaFleur is such a, I guess, quiet leader where you would never see him outwardly saying anything, but some of the comments he's made in previous weeks about like what he would be doing with the defense or acknowledging that there are things that need to be kind of straightened out if this Packers team wants to make a push in the playoffs. It is something noticeable and something significant that we probably wouldn't have seen from him in year one. And I think, not that it's a surprise, but I remember when he was hired, everybody talking about how he just seemed so unsure and he was kind of quiet and to himself. And he didn't seem like he had the gusto or like the tenacity to be an NFL head coach. And just kind of the way he's really emerged as a leader of men and a really good public speaker and kind of a representative of the Packers franchise has been really fun. And I don't know if I'd call it a surprise, but I think it was just, it's just a very natural kind of growth in his second season. And that's been really rewarding, especially kind of the relationship that he has with his guys and especially with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, their relationship is lovely. I mean, I think that I fully expected them to mesh in at a certain level, but by no means did I expect them to be, you know, as close as they seemingly are, nicknames and all, and just took so much respect between the two of them. Clearly, the way they talk about each other from a leadership and just like skill set standpoint, like you can tell that they just have an immense amount of respect for one another. I think there's something to be said, honestly, in bringing in a head coach to work with a quarterback where they're like kind of almost the same age. You know, he's still older than Rodgers, but I think he also gets Rodgers because they are the same age, but he's young enough to be able to connect with some of the younger guys on the team. It's a very interesting sort of age that Matt LaFleur is at from like a leadership standpoint.
Yeah. And I don't know if it has anything to do. So thank you, Jordan. You've sent us on a complete tangent that we didn't expect, but I don't know if it's something to do with kind of the way that Aaron Rodgers approached this season, but one of the things that's been really interesting to me too is just he seems so calm and so happy regardless of what's happening. Like even in a loss, you could tell in kind of previous seasons that it would eat at him or he'd be kind of figuring out like what went wrong or what they could do better. And this season, he just seems so at peace with everything. And the way that he praises Matt LaFleur at almost every opportunity and just talks about how much fun he's having playing football and how much he loves seeing guys like Big Dog celebrate and get touchdowns. And it's such a different feeling. And, you know, maybe it's because we were like 9 when the Packers brought in Mike McCarthy, but I just don't remember hearing Aaron Rodgers seem so relaxed and so like heaping so much praise onto McCarthy for like his scheme and the way that the team was developed. Like it really feels like when Matt LaFleur came in, he changed the culture. And I know we're not privy to other NFL locker rooms, but this is about the closest Packers team in the last couple seasons that I can remember a Packers team being, even with some of the big names that used to be on the roster.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. And yeah, just it's a big deal what Matt LaFleur has come in and done from a culture standpoint, plus just having a ridiculous amount of success on the field, which I don't think from a national media standpoint, he gets enough praise for, because that man has won more. Like his record is ridiculous and he's only ever lost one divisional game.
Never back to back ever.
Never back to back. Yeah. And sure. Yes. He has one of the best quarterbacks ever, but you know, we've seen that it doesn't matter how good Aaron Rodgers can be. Like they can still lose and have losing seasons with him. Like we saw it at the end of the Mike McCarthy era. So it isn't just about having the great quarterback. It's knowing what to do with him as well.
Yeah. And even like one of the examples, like when people talk about Davante Adams and his reputation as one of the best in the NFL, Davante Adams played really well with Brett Hundley. Like Davante was probably Brett Hundley's security blanket that season. So I think that's a true testament to who he is as a player too, is that ability to perform regardless of kind of your surroundings. And then it's, like you said, a testament more so to Matt LaFleur and the way that he can create a scheme that's effective to whatever personnel he has. He didn't need a first round wide receiver or, you know, a big free agent signing to still run a very successful offense. And, you know, by all statistics right now, as we record this, the number one offense in the NFL, which is pretty wild. So Robin asked us a couple different questions. We'll take a couple of them. You don't have to necessarily use Christian Kirksey as an example here, but obviously the question was, would you release Christian Kirksey at the season's end to free up $6 million? And I guess maybe from a more broad sense, do you see any Packers that are on the team now that don't have expiring contracts kind of being on the hook to maybe let them go to make room for some of the Packers free agents? And I guess, sorry to spring this on you, you don't have to fully answer, but kind of how would you rate the priority then of the remaining Packers free agents? Because we've seen Kenny Clark and David Bakhtiari get their money. And I feel like kind of going into the season, those were the two that were the agreed upon priority one and two for this Packers team.
I think that I can't see the Packers making like willy nilly casualty cuts. That's not something that they do. I can see them like restructuring contracts to keep people before they just cut people outright. I also think that honestly, after Aaron Jones, they likely won't extend any more players. I want so badly Corey Linsley to stay, and maybe after his up and down season of, you know, health wise, maybe he would take a little bit more of a team friendly deal in order to do that, and that way they can keep him. But I just can't see the Packers extending anybody else besides Aaron Jones, and so that doesn't necessarily like mean that they're in any sort of cap space hell. They can structure it in a way where it's, you know, less cap heavy the next two seasons, or, you know, most cap heavy this coming season and not in next season when they have to pay Jair and Devontae, and deal with maybe some cuts after next season when they need to make those two likely ginormous extensions that both of those players deserve. So I think like, there's been some talk about Christian Kirksey. Maybe Rick Wagner was only a one-year situation. I've heard like Adrian Amos and Preston Smith thrown around there. I don't think either of those guys are going anywhere. The Packers are always very deliberate in the deals that they make, and I can't see them. That's not the formula for the way this Packers front office works, is just cutting people outright.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I like the way that you worded that, especially with like deliberately, because I agree with you that I don't think that's really how the Packers kind of operate historically. And, you know, a lot of kind of maybe the hiccups that we're seeing with guys like Preston Smith was more due to the scheme that the defensive coordinator was utilizing in the beginning of the season. And I think that kind of going into these last four games of the season, a lot of that'll be really telling is what happens with guys like Preston and Rashawn and kind of that additional development. I don't think Adrian Amos goes absolutely anywhere. He has looked so good for the Packers. Darnell Savage is still obviously ascending. As far as cutting players, I agree with you. I don't think that that's really something that the Packers do. I think Jimmy Graham was kind of the exception and not the norm as far as releasing a player early. The question mark I have, I think, honestly, is at the center position. Like you said, I adore Corey Linsley and his family. And I wonder what they're going to do with Elgton Jenkins. Corey Linsley was the best center before injury by Pro Football Focus standards, one of the best in the NFL at what he does. Elgton Jenkins plays literally anywhere. And I don't know if you want to take away from kind of shoring up your left guard position for the next 10 years to now find a center. You know, I guess it's where do you value some of those positions. So I agree with you about Kevin King. And I guess this is my early bid saying I wouldn't be too surprised if the Packers take a corner in the first round of the 2021 NFL draft.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Another question then is, would you consider Big Bob Tonyan to be playing at a Pro Bowl level?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. The guy's got 8 touchdowns. He's playing like one of the best tight ends in the league right now, honestly, besides like Travis Kelce and Darren Waller. Who else is having the production that he is?
Yeah.
Certainly in the NFC, right? I can't think of any other tight end on any other team. Like Kyle Rudolph's not doing anything. So Yeah, I think for sure. I think he also has, I mean, look, the Pro Bowl is a little bit of a joke. I don't take it seriously whatsoever, but it is a bit of a popularity contest. And Big Bob, I think, has created, or not created, but shown the NFL, not just Packers fans, but like shown the greater NFL, like his personality, which is lovely and fun and bubbly. And I think that that also leans into a little bit of the Pro Bowl voting. So I wouldn't be surprised, since he's such a likable guy, that he would get voted to the Pro Bowl. But it doesn't even matter this year because they're not even playing the game.
Yeah, I know it's a virtual Pro Bowl, and I don't know what that means. Probably nothing. But in my head, I picture them playing like Jackbox games or trivia, Madden, or some, yeah, like some weird virtual contest. But vote for Za'Darius Smith for the Pro Bowl. He does not want to be snubbed again. That's kind of a big thing on the show. We love and support Za'Darius Smith at everything he does, and we protect him at all costs. But yeah, Barry, I think we're just about out of time. So before we wrap up the show, do you have a game prediction for Sunday? What you got for the score?
Yeah, I think it's going to be like 37-20.
Okay.
I said this on Packer Report with Ross. I think that, you know, the Packers will let the Lions have some level of garbage time points. I think you can see it being very similar to the last like 2 weeks, where the final score and the actual real score while the game was still on the line, are two very different things. So, but I can't envision a world where this is a game that the Packers don't win quite handily.
Yeah, I said that kind of the same thing on Pack-A-Day. It's just, you know, the Lions, I don't know why, have historically played the Packers really close kind of these last couple seasons. And it's, I guess not really week two. The Packers kind of pulled that one away, but they did start down 14-0. So, you know, there is some element to the Lions that always kind of keep things interesting with the Packers. The score I had in mind was like 30-20, 35-27. I don't know if I think it'll be a one-score game, but I do kind of feel like the Packers will put up some points. And like you said, we'll see opportunities for the Lions to kind of sneak back into the game and make it look like it was a much more contested match than it really was. So, you know, we talked about in the beginning of the show, this is an opportunity for the Packers to clinch the division. If they beat the Lions on Sunday, and if the Vikings lose to the Buccaneers, the Packers will be getting their hats and t-shirts for Christmas, just like Za'Darius Smith wanted last season in week 16. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of fun that they can clinch the North against another opponent. It would be Matt LaFleur's second division win, or I guess, yeah, clinching the entire NFC North in his two seasons as the head coach. So, Mary, if all of the lovely listeners would like to follow your work on social media, how can they do that?
You can just follow me at Perry_Goldstein, follow the podcast at PWSS Podcast. If you aren't already, you should be, with all the lovely updates. That's how you could have submitted your questions today for the mailbag. So thank you all for sending in your questions. I'm sorry we didn't get to every single one of them. And then everything else, all of my work is in my bio. So very easy to find there on Twitter.
Yep. And you can find me on Twitter at Maggie J. Loney. I write two articles a week for Cheesehead TV. I podcast with the Pack-A-Day Podcast Thursday crew, and you can find Perry and me on Mondays with Game On Wisconsin doing happy hour at 6 p.m. Lambeau time. You can also buy Packs What She Said merchandise in the link on our Twitter bio through our Teespring. I was just wearing a Packs What She Said sweater about an hour ago, and I changed because I was hot. So we also make t-shirts if you find yourself in that same situation as me. So thank you, as always, for listening to the show. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.